Okay, so for the guys in my share, this I got it that will be familiar. But I want to focus this time on the Agarata, not the halachic component. Herod.
Herod.
Oh, this one.
Herod.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
The Herod Gemara.
Herod?
Yeah.
Yes.
Herodos.
Yeah.
Herodos. King Herod. We've been looking at it extensively, Yaakov. Yeah. Remember?
What is it?
Masha Balacha. What? Okay. Fine. I mean, we're not doing the halachic component. We're doing Agarata. Fine. So, guys. So, the Gemara on Gimel and Beis tells the following story. Yaakov, I'm not offended. If you're sick of seeing this Gemara because we've been on it for 5 days. So the Gemara tells the following story. Hurda avda de Beit Hashmonai. So the way we get into this Gemara is the Gemara is talking about destroying things, building them up, destroying a shul, preparing it for another shul. And that happened with the Beit HaMikdash, that you had to take apart certain parts of the Beit HaMikdash to rebuild it. Okay. So, Hordus Avda de Beit Hashmonai Havei. De Beit Hashmonai. Avinatan Eina Be'ota Tinoke. Hordus, or Herod, was a slave in the house of the Hasmoneans, of the Hashmonaim. And he was sexually attracted to one of the young women amongst the Hashmonaim. Yomachad Shamahu Gavra Batkal Damar Kol Avda Demarid Hashta Matzlach. And he heard a Batkal, a voice from heaven, who said one day that any servant that rebels today will be successful. Come Katlinu Lukula Maruta Vishaire Lahi Yinukta. So he got up and he killed the entire Hasmonean dynasty, except for this one woman. Kol mandati v'amar... Sorry, I skipped a line. Ki chazer ha-yinukta de kaboy le-minziba. When this woman realized that Herod wanted to marry her, what did she do? Slikid le-igra v'ramo kala v'amra kol mandati v'amar b'l'chashmonoi ka'atina avdahu. And she throws herself off the roof, and she says that anybody who says they are from the Hasmonean dynasty is lying, and he's a slave, because lo ishtayra minayu elahu yinukta. There is the only person left is me, this young woman. Vayinukta nafla meigra laara. And that woman is about to fall from the roof and then plunges to her death. So what happens? Tamna Sheva Shnin Bidubsha. Herod stores her body for 7 years in honey. Ikadamri Bala. Some say he did that because he slept with her, he had sex with her. Necrophilia, yes. And he slept with this dead woman and preserved her body in honey. Some say he didn't sleep with her. So obviously the ones who say he slept with her is because he was overcome by his desire. And the ones who say he didn't sleep with her, it was he wanted people to think that he married a member of the royal family. So he just wanted her to be seemingly alive. She's resting. I don't know. She's what? I don't know. Maybe he took out her body every so often. I don't know. I don't know what he did. What?
Would that work?
Yes. Honey does indeed preserve things that way, yes.
I know it stays around for thousands of years.
Correct. Presumably it would do it. I don't know. I've never tried it. I never plan on trying it. I can go on record that I never plan on trying this, but I don't know. So what happens? In the meantime, he gets a little bit scared because the rabbis have a rule that slaves aren't allowed to be members of the monarchy. So what does he do? And they say, Amar man darish mikerav achich atasim alecho melech. Because they say you have to be Karavachecha, which means you have to be a Jew, a full Jew. The exact parameters of that are Machloge Rishonim, but not for now. Rabbanon, so they said, who says this? The rabbis. So what did he do? Come Katlinu Lukulu Rabbanon. So he killed all the rabbis. Except for one. Shavke Libava ben Buta Limishkal Eitzamine. He left one sage so that he'd have somebody to get advice from. Bava ben Buta. But he puts a crown of thorns on his head so that it pokes out his eyes, so he's blind. So one day he comes in disguise. Not only disguise, he's Bava Mutta is blind. He comes without telling him who he is. And he says, and he says, he tries to get him to speak badly about Herod, and he says, "That look how bad that slave is, and what he's doing." So Amar Lei, so Bava Mimbuta says, "Maya Avid Lei, what do you want from my life? What am I supposed to do to him?" Amar Lei, Nilat Lemar, at least curse him. Right? Like he's bad. Say something. Right? Say how much you hate him. Amar Leik, Tiv Gam Bimadacha Melech Altikal. He says, even in your mind, right? Even in private, you don't curse the king. Amar Leik, I love Melechu. He said, yeah, that's true, but he's not a king. Because he's a slave. And the rabbis say slaves can't be kings. So Amar Leik, meaning he can never be king. He needs to be a born Jew. Amar Leik, Asher Ba'alma. So he said, you're right, maybe he's not king. But he's wealthy. Uktiv uchadre mishkavecha al tikal el ashir. Kohelet says, don't curse the rich. V'lo yehel nasi. And he said, so maybe he's just a leader. Uktiv nasi b'amcha lo tahor. We don't curse leaders. Yes, Ezra. Good question. According to the Ramban, the reason that all the Chashmonim had to die was because they violated the Yisr D'Oraisa of either anyone usurping the Davidic dynasty, or for one of the possibilities the Ramban raises in Breishit Mem Tet Yud, specific prohibition for Kohanim to be kings. The rabbi, the Chazal have a very mixed opinion of Chashmonaim. They're not embracing of them. It was a necessary temporary measure, but in general Chazal have a very ambivalent view towards the Chashmonaim. It's not. It's Mekarav Achecha. He has to be Mekarav Achecha. He has to be a full Jew. A slave is one of the cases, but a ger is the same.
But I'm saying the actual thing is from, David, right? So if it's actually from that line specifically, then what's the point of specifically saying a ger or a slave?
So it's a halachic sugya for another time, but it may be more expansive. Right? It may not just be kingship. It may be any leadership position. Right, this is part of the same sugya of women's leadership positions, is this same drasha. Right? Well, a related drasha, which is Melech v'lamalka. Right? And in general, the questions of how much of these restrictions apply only to monarchy and how much of them are about leadership in general. It's complicated. Whatever, you have to look. Tosfos and Nida Dafna, and there's a long discussion in the Tashbates and in Perkei Avos, Mishnah Aleph Perek Vav. Perek Aleph Mishnah Vav, different. Anyways, so Amar Lei. So Herod said to him, "You know, and I know that you only can curse Bosei Maase Amcha, people who follow the way of the Torah. V'ai La Bosei Maase Amcha, and he's not." So finally, Bava Ben Buta says to him, "What does he say? Remember, you're right. Maybe I'm allowed to curse him, but Amar Lei Mistafina Mine. I'm afraid." So Amar Lei. Leka Inish Dazil. The lema le, the anav atya tivna. Said no one's going to tell. It's just you and me. So Amar Lake, the kiofa shamayim yolichet akol ba'agam yakid davar. The birds will tell him. Meaning, you don't say anything you don't want people to know. Don't say. Finally, Herod admits, Amar le, anu, it's me. And iave yadani dizihire rabbanan kulei. If I knew the rabbis were such careful people, I never would have killed all of them. Great comfort there. Hashta maita kante. What is my tshuva? Dahu gavra. Amarle. So he said to him, Hu kava ora shel olam. You extinguished the light of the world. Dechtiv ki ner mitzvah v'torah or. Because mitzvot are candles and the Torah is light from Mishle. So yelech v'yasuk ba'orah shel olam. So go and be involved in the light of the world. Dichtiv naru elav kol goyim, the Beit HaMikdash, which enlightens all nations. Alternatively, ikad amri le amr le husima eino shel olam. Others say what he said to him was, "You blinded the eyes of the world." Dichtiv ayah imeinei aida, because the sages are called the eyes of the people. Yilech v'tiasek b'eino shel olam. So go be involved in the eye of the world. Dichtiv hinini mechalol mikdashig onuzchem achmaranichem. Amar le, so Herod says to Mistafina Mimilchuta, I'm afraid of the king. Amar le, Shadar Shlicha, Vilezel Shata, Vileakiv Shata, Vilahadir Shata. Here's what you should do. Send a message to Rome and make sure that the message takes 3 years. Make sure that it takes him a year to get there, a year to tarry, and a year to get back. Why? In the meantime, you'll have time to build it. By the time you get a no for an answer, it'll be done. Right, you'll have 3 years to get it done, and then it's a fait accompli. So Shalchulei, and this is what they said to him. The Romans figured out what he was up to, and they wrote back a letter. Im lo satarta, if you haven't already taken apart with the intent of rebuilding it, al tistor. So don't start the construction process. Im satarta, if you already took it apart, al tivne, don't build it. Vim satarto vanit, and if you managed to take it apart and rebuild it since you sent that letter, avda bisha batar da avdin mitmalchin. Im zainach alach safrach kan loracha velo baracha. Hurdist avda klanya mit avya mayracha machuta dechsev, etc. And he says, and if you did it, you are a bad servant. And we know that you're really not a king. Right? We know where you really come from. Okay? Let's focus on this relatively long unit of an Agadata. So, there are many different ways to analyze Agadot. I want to take up this Agadata in several ways. Okay? Specifically on the first paragraph of Avasra, if you're interested, there was an entire dissertation written just on the first parak of Bava Basra, just in the Agadotot in the first parak of Bava Basra, by Rabbi Dr. Yonatan Feintuch. And he has excellent treatment of these Agadotot. So, he starts off, and he says, okay, what is the central theme of this Agadotot? So, if you want to figure out the central theme, guys, tell me, what would I look for? Who are my lit guys? Who are literature people here? Literature. Who are my lit guys? Raise your hands. Don't be afraid. Good. So, let's do a literary analysis. If I want to figure out the central theme, what would I look for? Very good. A great way to look is, what word or theme comes up over and over? In German, in Hebrew, it's called a milah mancha. In English, it's called a guide word. Most of the people who originally wrote about it were German, and they called it a light vort. What? Light vort. Light vort. You know a vort? A word? You know when someone says a dvar Torah, a vort, it really means a word. Like a dvar Torah, a word of Torah. A vort is a dvar, right? A davar. So a light vort is milah mancha, it's a guide word. It's just the German. Okay, fine. You can forget this if you want. You can forget the German. Okay, it never happened. What? So one of the ways to look for the repeated theme, right, the motif, would be to look for a repeated word. But yes, that's what we're doing. We're looking for the motif. So, there are at least two themes that come up over and over and over in this story that would point to this story really being a rumination about those themes. So what are the themes? There are really two. What themes come up over and over and over again? Well, think about a pair. Think of a pair. In this particular case, it happens to be two pairs that come up a lot. King, but Lumat what? Slave. Very good. One theme that is clearly the motif slash the word, if you want to just focus on words that come up, is the slave king pair. Let's think about how many times it comes up. Okay? First, it says Herod is a slave in the Chashmonai house. Then, the bat kol comes out and says, any slave that rebels today will be successful. He rises up, he kills his masters, he wants to marry the Chashmonai princess, and what does she say? Anybody, this is where I need my literature people. I need you to be precise. Yes, she dies, but what does she say? Anyone who he says that he's from Beit Chashmonai, meaning says he's a king, what is he really? A slave. Then what happens? What's the next time? He's rejected from being a king because Mikarav Achecha Tasa Malecha Melech. Fifth time, right, what happens? He says to Bava Ben Buta, curse him, he says, not really a king, he says, not a king. Right?
When the killing
was I want Evan. I'm pointing on this theme. I want this theme. How many times it comes up? Yeah, that's what I said. I said the Mikarav Achecha thing, the drasha. Right, sorry, yes. The Mikarav Achecha, because he's a slave, he can't be a king story. Good. Then, Bava Ben Buta, he says, curse him. He says, no, he's king. He says, he's not really king. Okay. Then, it comes up in one more really, really intense way, which is? The Roman response. Right? Which is, if you didn't, take apart the Beit HaMikdash to rebuild it, don't do it. If you did, then don't build it. If you already did it, you're a bad slave. And we know who you are. You're not a king nor the son of a king, right? You're not Racha nor Bar Mat Racha. By the way, parenthetically, why is Racha king? How do you know that Racha is king in the Gemara? In the Roman response. What language is it? What? It's Latin. Rex. Thank you. Thank you. Rex is king, right? It's Latin. Yes. By the way, that is how it comes up once in Unculus. This is trivia. Once in Unculus translates a Hebrew word based on the Latin. And it's this word. What word is it? Let's see if you can get this. Trivia of my Targum Unculus Aramaic / Latin experts, which all of you clearly fall into that very narrow category. Yeah? Paro calls Yosef Avreich. And everyone says, what does the word Avreich mean? And Unculus translates Ava Abba or Ava, whatever, Av. Lemalchin, father of kings, because he's reading the Reich as Rex, that Av Reich is Av L'Rex, right? The father of kings, Av in Ava Lemalchin.
Is it Rex like Greek?
Yes.
It might also be Greek.
No, that's why it's called Oedipus Rex.
Yeah, I don't think it's Greek. Is it? In this case, it's Romans. I assume it's more Latin, but you can look how many languages is true. If I'm wrong, of which is the original etymology, that's fine. Okay. Yeah, go away, cat. Ugh. Fine. What do you want? Oh, these cats drive me nuts. Okay. Good. So far we've identified one pair of milot manchot, right? Of guide words, of motifs, of a pair of motifs. Okay, I was right the first time. Baruch Hashem. Yeah, now let's push it farther. What does it mean? Yeah, Sean. Yes, that is a good point. Good, let's take it one at a time, but you're right. But let's focus, right, so let's start with point one. What does that tell you about the story? My lit guys, if you have a motif like that, then what does that already tell you? What is this story about? One of, at least one of the things, what is this story about? What would that indicate to you? Oh no, come on. Cats. What do you think?
Yeah.
I didn't say Paro did. I said Onkelos was at a loss. So Onkelos, it translates it based on that. Right? It's clear that's what Onkelos is doing. What? He just doesn't know. So he translates the word based on words that are available to him. Or whatever he thinks. Remember, Onkelos is Roman. Right? By Chazal's account, he's Roman. So that's not crazy. If you don't know, then you guess. Right? Based on the etymology, you know. Right? Remember, not everything in Torah is... Right? There are words like this that are not Hebrew. Right? Right? In that same thing, his name is not Hebrew. Tzavna Paneach is not Hebrew. Right? So every so often, when you get a foreign person in Tanakh, you'll actually hear their language. So it's right, like by Yaakov and Lavan, right, when they make their commemorative statue thing, pile of rocks, right? What is it called? Yaakov calls it Galed, which is Hebrew, and what does Lavan call it? In the Torah, Yigar Sahaduta. Yigar Sahaduta, which is the Aramaic of Galed. It's the exact same thing. Sahaduta is, right, is testimony, and Yigar is a Gal, is a pile. Good, so what does that tell me about this story? What is it? Right, Bigadol, tell me, what does that tell me? If this is the pair that comes up seven times, or whatever it is, right, then what does that tell me about the theme, or at least one of the key themes in the story? Be very specific. What is it? Meaning it's a rumination on, right, on this, right, on the nature of power versus the nature of slavery. But very specifically, let's push it a little bit farther. There's a single powerful insight that emerges from Chazal's treatment of Eved Melech in this unit, which is... Yes, Rami.
I'm thinking like the other one. The
This point. And I think, if you want the key is said by the Romans. The Romans sum up in perfect literary structure the real message, which is meaning very good, meaning yes, exactly, meaning the story is, right, basically saying just because you have power doesn't make you a king, right, it's power is not synonymous with king. And if you think about it, this is a very powerful rumination on that, from the beginning to the end. Right? It's saying, if the slave rises up, then he'll be successful against his masters. But what is the, again, what does the princess say? Because anyone who says he's a king, know that he's a slave. Meaning it's not just, these aren't just foils. Right? These aren't just pairs. It's, if he says he's a king, you know he's a slave. Why? But think about it. Why do you know he's a slave?
The king doesn't say he's
a king. It's not just that. Think in the story. Because the slave murdered every member of the royal family. Meaning, how do you know that he can't possibly be a king? Because he murdered everyone. Meaning, it's his own actions that let you know that he can't possibly be, right? If he hadn't killed everyone, then you couldn't state, then he could get away with it because there would still be Chashmonaim and he could claim to be one of them. But it's only because of his unmitigated evil that he killed every member of the Chashmoni family that you know that he's not a king. Right? It's very pointedly saying it's because of, right, he thought, and this is where you push it farther, it's more than that. It's the things that you think are going to make you a king are the opposite, right? He thinks that what's going to make him a king is killing all the Chashmonaim. Now what does she say? Anyone who says Chashmonaim, because you know he murdered them, that's, you know he's not a real king. Right? It's a very pointed statement. And it's not surprising that, as Sean notes, right, he does this twice. Right? There's this parallelism where he does it to the Chashmonaim, bar one, right? He kills everyone except for one, and that person kills herself. And then he kills all the rabbis except for one. But if you're really careful, it might be more parallel, because let's see if you remember why it might be more parallel than it seems. Because the Chashmonaim, he kills all except for one and keeps her quasi alive, right? So people think she's alive. He blinds him, and Chazal think that blind people are kemet. So you have the princess who's dead, but he's putting her in honey so she seems alive, and Bava ben Buta, who is alive but is blind, who's nechshav kemet. So in both cases, everyone's killed except for one person, and that one person is kept in some sort of limbo, either actually dead but looks alive, or actually alive but halachically, philosophically, hashkafically dead. Right, so it's clear that he repeats his mistake twice. And he gets into this argument with Bava ben Buta, which ends up being about this point, where the amazing thing of this story, and if you want to think about how profound this story is, think about this part. What happens? He gets into an argument with Bava ben Buta and says, curse him. And what does Bava ben Buta say? I can't, why not? He's a king. And what does he say? He's not a king. Watch that reversal in the story. He killed the rabbis. Why? Because he wanted to be king, and the rabbi said, you can't be king. But he's so insecure that what ends up happening? He goes to the one remaining rabbi and he tells him, curse him. And what does the rabbi tell him? You're a king. And what does he do to deal with his lack of comfort in his own position? What does he say? He admits he's not a king. Right? Think about what happens. It's such a beautiful moment in the story. Right? He killed the rabbis because they were undermining his status as king. But then he goes to the rabbi. The rabbi says, I can't curse him. He's king. And he says, he's not king. Now you'll say he's just trying to trick him. Of course. But literally, right? That flip, where the rabbi is saying, Ma pitom, you're king. And he says, no, I'm not, right? No, he's not, right?
What if he's not the newest?
Ah, very good. And that leads to the last time. And then the truth is revealed. So he says to Bava ben Buta, what should I do? And what did Bava ben Buta say? Write a letter to the Romans, make sure it takes 3 years. At that moment, what's happening? What? It's such a, but it's such a beautiful moment. It's not just taking orders. What's happening? Why does Bava ben Buta, the Gemara says a little bit later on, why did Bava ben Buta let Herod build the Beit HaMikdash aren't you not supposed to encourage non-Jews to do tzedakah and do mitzvot? So that's what I've been doing in Shir in the morning, so I went back do it again. So what does the Gemara say later on? The Beit HaMikdash, the only person who can manage to build it is the king. You need king. So Herod is suddenly, for the first time, actually, I probably should have read that line, so let me read it and get you to the end point. The Gemara later on says, V'barba ben Buddha hechi avid achi. How could he have let Herod build a Beit HaMikdash? V'amar Rav Yehuda amar Rav Yitem Rav Yeshua ben Levi Minimah Nenash Daniel. Why was Daniel punished? Mivnei she'esi eitzel v'vuchanetzar. Shne'mar l'an malka malki yashver alach chadech v'tztakah prok v'vitach v'meichan anyan hein davi arka l'shalvatach. Uchtiv kula mata v'vuchanetzar malki l'ktil l'ktzad yarchin treyasar. Bikitzor, as I mentioned to the guys in my shir, Nebuchadnezzar has a dream, which means that which tells him he's going to turn into an animal, and he asks Daniel what to do, and Daniel tells him that if he gets stuck, it'll save him, and that saves him for 12 months, and then eventually he's arrogant again, and he turns into an animal and lives as an animal for 7 years. Fascinating story in Daniel. But the Gemara says that Daniel was punished for encouraging Nebuchadnezzar to do a mitzvah, give tzedakah, because that saved him from punishment. So the Gemara says, how could Beva ben Buta let Herod build a Beit HaMikdash? So answer one is he was an Eved. So he is, right? I wonder, read these two lines. Two possibilities. E bayit ema, shiny avda dechayev mitzvot. Possibility one is he's allowed to build a Beit HaMikdash because he's an Eved. So he's a part Jew. So he's allowed to do the mitzvah. Ibayit ema, possibility two. Shiny Beit HaMikdash. The ilo malchut lo mitbenei. The Beit HaMikdash is different because if the king isn't involved, it won't happen. So I want you to think about this story. What happens here? Right? He admits he's not king. Right? Total flip. And then what? 1 second. He goes and builds the Beit HaMikdash. And the Romans say to him, you're not king, you're a slave. You're a bad slave. But then the Gemara comes, and what does it say at the end? So then why did Bava ben Buta let him build a Beit HaMikdash? And the Gemara has two very different possibilities that close out this rumination on slavery versus true Malchus perfectly. What's the Gemara's two possibilities? Very good. Possibility one is he's a slave, and that's the reason he's allowed to be there, build a Beit HaMikdash, because he's a part Jew. His claim to fame is not that he's king, but that he's a slave, and that makes him a part Jew, and that's his real, right? It's not about how much power he's chayv in mitzvos, because he's an Eved. That's why he gets to build a Beit HaMikdash. Possibility one. What's possibility two? Yes, possibility two is he's the only person who can do it because he's the king, right? So after the whole Gemara going about the fact that he's not really a king, he's a slave, getting to the point where he admits that, the closing of the Gemara is, why does he get to build a Beit HaMikdash? Two possibilities. Either Dafka, because he's a slave, that makes him Jewish enough that he has the zchut to build a Beit HaMikdash, or because he's really a king, and only a king can build a Beit HaMikdash. So you have this amazing, right? When you think about it, it's an incredible, incredible insight about leadership. What's it saying? You totally don't get it, right? You think that what makes you king, what makes you valuable, is you can get up and you can kill your masters and you can kill the rabbis and you have so much power. No. If you get up and murder everyone, that's how everyone knows you're really a slave. You kill all the rabbis because that's how you're going to cement your power? Yeah, but the insecurity that comes from that is going to get you to admit that you're a slave. Right? You're going to admit that to Bava ben Buta. He's going to call you a king. And you're going to say, no, I'm not. You can curse him. He's not a real king. The Romans will put you in your place. And then the Gemara closes. Yeah, And you know where real greatness comes from? Very good. The Gemara has two possibilities. Why does he get to build the Beit HaMikdash? Either because he's an Eved. You thought Eved was what made you nothing? No. Right? You're chayev in mitzvos? That's enough. Nebuchadnezzar, we won't let him give tzedakah. And he is definitely king. He's emperor of the Babylonian Empire. And him we want to suffer and we don't want him to do mitzvot. But a lowly slave who's chayev in mitzvot, he can build a Beit HaMikdash. You think greatness is about being king? You're wrong. That's not what makes you kid. That's not what makes you great. Makes you great. You're chayev in mitzvot, you're going to do the right thing. Now that's true greatness. You think Eved is your... that makes you a nothing. No! You can build a Beit HaMikdash if Nebuchadnezzar can't. That's answer one. And what's answer two? Very good. The only time in the story that he's called, he's actually acknowledged to be a king, is exactly, is after he admits that he's not, tries to do tshuva, and builds the Beit HaMikdash. You think, and remember, because he built the Beit HaMikdash, the Romans say, ugh, you're not a real king, you're a servant, right? And you're a bad servant at that. But the authoritative voice of the Gemara says, ah, at that moment you're king. Right? The Gemara is making a very profound statement about what greatness is, right? It's not you're powerful, you can be a totalitarian, you can kill all your enemies. That you think makes you great, makes you king? No. That makes you insecure, that makes you pathetic, right? Everyone sees through that. You take ownership for what you did. You're a great person. And you want to call your great person Malchut? Fine. You want to say you're great specifically because you're an Eved? Fine. Because greatness isn't about your title. It's about what you do. And therefore you could be great and build a Beit HaMikdash specifically because you're an Eved? Or because you made a Mikdash, I'll finally admit that you're a Melech. But you only did that. You only had the schut to build a Beit HaMikdash because you acknowledged you were wrong. You did tshuva. So the first thing here is that the Gemara is a very deep philosophical, literary, moralistic story about true greatness and power. And you see that from this beautiful pairing of Eved and Melech throughout the whole story. There's one more pair. That's very, yeah. Because he's under them. He's like, he's not really king, he's more governor. They are in charge. He's under the Roman Empire.
Yeah, but is it up to the Jews who's there
or not? Not under the Roman Empire, it's not. They ruled the world. He's appointed, right? He serves at their largesse.
But I'm saying, like, when the next in line were to die, the Romans would decide that.
100%. 100%.
That's what happened.
Good. There's one more pair that's very important here. What is it? And if we only get through these pairs, so today was an example of a literary read of an Agadata, but there's another pair here. And what is it? What?
Freedom and slavery.
Well, we just did slavery. It's not really freedom. It's slavery and kingship. Right? That's pair one. What's the second pair? Sight, right? True sight, right? Eyes. I mean, eyes. Very good. Yes, it is. Right? How often does that come up in the story?
He sees the woman.
Very good. It starts off with he sees the woman, right? It's not that he's attracted. It's he puts his eyes on the woman. Ba'otatinoket. Very good. That's the first time. Next time. What? Very good. He blinds Bava Ben Buta. That's his solution, to blind Bava Ben Buta. And then what happens? He says to Bava Ben Buta, how do I, once he realizes that they were careful and that they wouldn't have opposed him just on pragmatic grounds, he says, Oive, what should I do? And what does he answer? He gives him two possibilities. What does he say? Either, very good, either you killed the eyes of the world, so be involved with Beit HaMikdash, which is the eye of the world, or you extinguish the light of the world, so rebuild the light of the world, which are obviously both the same, right? These are both vision. Because what's the Gemara saying? And this relates to what we said before. The first point that we talked about, which is the true meaning of leadership and the true meaning of greatness, part of that is that it's a story about the importance of perspective, right? Of being able to see the truth. Because think about what happens in the story. Who is the most insightful person in the story? The blind rabbi. The chachamim are the eyes of the world. But think of the irony. Bava ben Buddha is the blind rabbi who says that, and constantly Herod thinks he can trick Bava ben Buddha because he's blind. And consistently Bava ben Buddha outwits him. Because, again, you think that sight is about what you see? No. Sight is about insight. The rabbis who will tell you the truth, that's insight. Your eyes lead you astray. You got into this because you saw that girl and you chased after her. That's what led to your downfall. And if you hadn't been chasing the woman, she wouldn't have proclaimed to everyone that you were a slave and revealed the truth. But you did. You were afraid of what the rabbis would say, so you killed all of them and you blinded one because you thought that would hide the truth. But at the end of the day, the blind rabbi had the insight and you didn't see what was going on. And at the end of the day, you humble yourself and you ask him, so what should I do? And what does he say? Rebuild the, right? Rebuild the sight of the world. Rebuild the light of the world. Meaning, take stock. Get a different perspective. The Beit HaMikdash. So the Gemara has this second pairing, the second idea of blindness versus true sight. And again, the Gemara does the same thing. Right? The first pairing tells you, you think power is about brute force. That's not what it's about. True power is about doing the right thing. Right? That's what makes you great. It doesn't matter whether you're an Eved or a Melech. You do the right thing, you're great. And the second thing is the same thing on perspective. You want to be great, you need perspective. And things aren't as they look. You happen to have eyes, so you think you understand. No, no, no. The blind rabbi sees more than you. The chachamim are the eyes of the world. The Beit HaMikdash is the eyes of the world. You, who can see, and were using your eyes to chase after the Hasmonean girl, to think that that's your route to power, you're blind. You're the one who doesn't see. Right? You're the one who didn't realize that you should have left the rabbis around. You're the one who didn't realize what true power is like. So the Gemara introduces these, right, two pairs, the Melech Eved and the blindness, sight, light, to make those two points. What is true power? It's doing what's right, not brute force. And perspective is what's important in life, not just physical sight, right? Not being led after your eyes to sleep with this, you know, necrophilia, which is what that led you to, right? That's not sight, right? So your eyes can see. Big deal. You want to know what the true light in the world is, the true sight? It's proper perspective of the world. So this is an example. What we did today, and I try to do different types of Haggadah Tot with different methodological approaches. Right, this is a very classic literary analysis, right? I mean, my lit guys, right? You would do this with a literary story, right? You would find a light, right? You'd find a motif, you'd find a light for it, you'd say, what is the theme? And then you would watch the ironies in the story, right? And here, especially in Eved Melech, you have the amazing irony, right? Again, to highlight the two most dramatic points on the slave Melech point is, well, three really, right? Is the woman, the young girl from the Chashmonim saying, because he killed everybody, anyone who says he's a Melech, he's an Eved, by definition. And then him killing the rabbis because they say he can't be king. But then it ended up being that the rabbis are willing to admit that he's king, and he's the one who ends up saying he's not because of his insecurity. And then the Gemara ends up saying that the Romans may call him not king, but at the end of the day, he is king, but only after he admits he's not king and goes and builds the Beit HaMikdash. And then, at the end of the day, his greatness isn't dependent on him being king. It's his greatness is true. And the only question is whether he was Zohar to build the Beit HaMikdash was because he was king or Dafka because he was an Eved. But either way, he's greater than Nebuchadnezzar, who's definitely a king, because he did the right thing and Nebuchadnezzar did not. And the second is this idea that what matters in life is not sight, physical, but insight, but perspective. And therefore, Herod is the blind one, Bava ben Buta, the blind rabbi, is the Ene, right? The Ene Ha'am, the eyes of the world, who tells him, rebuild the eyes of the world, rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. He ends up asking the blind rabbi how to fix the world, and the blind rabbi sees that the only way is to bring back sight. Right, the irony is heavily laced into the story, but clearly making a moral point, or a theological point, or a literary point, all of them, whatever you want. There happen to be other sight words in some of the Gemaras that I skipped. In the middle, the Gemara goes into great depth about what Herod actually did to the Beit HaMikdash and focuses on mitchazeh, how it looks like one thing, but it really is another, right? The beauty of Herod's Beit HaMikdash is that he built it in such a way that the rocks look like waves, right? Mitchazeh kiyama, right? That there's deceptive, right? That he manages to make it look like one thing. If you've ever gone to the parts of, right, on the tour of the Beit HaMikdash, you know, remaining walls, and they'll point out what that means, right? You remember they did this last year when we did Ir David, the way the bricks go like this, right? That they're meant to look like waves, right? You can still see it out of or whatever is left of Herod's walls, which is a decent amount, enough that you can look at. The last part of it, you know, that you have to deal with is, why is this here? In the third, right? In Daf Gimel, in the middle of the first paragraph of Bava Basra. But we have 3 minutes, so I'm not sure we have time to do that, which is fine. I'll just throw out a few possibilities that Feintuch has in one of his articles. One might just be that the previous section of the Beit HaMikdash was talking about the different quality of building materials. So the Gemara simply wanted to talk about the most beautiful building materials because it praises how much effort Herod ends up putting once he builds the Beit HaMikdash, right? Which is a relatively technical reason. The other one, and this is a bit of a stretch, but it might work, is that, and I'll end with this, what is the main halachic theme of the first perek? What sugya did all of us start with? One specific part of Shufin, which one? What? Hezegriah, very good. Hezegriah, right, is that the Gemara is about the right and wrong types of sight. And the second theme about the importance of sight and being careful with sight and what true sight is, it that's dafka a good place to put a Agadata, that at least one of its major themes is this contemplation of the nature of true vision and perspective and sight. In the context of Hezekiah, it actually makes a lot of sense that you would include Agadata with one of its themes being that. Okay? Those are two suggestions that he brings as to why this Agadata appears here. There is a lot more to talk about in the Agadata, but I think for today we did a decent job at understanding what a literary analysis would look like in an Agadata, and I hope you can use those in different places, that methodology, but we'll stop here.